very disappointed. I just... It's sickening. I'm very disappointed tonight, Al. You have not mentioned how natty I look today. You notice? Or don't you think I do? Bring it up big, gang, big. I said big. Happy Friday to you. Thank God it's Friday to you. Thank God it's Friday. We made it again. Please, Al, thank God it's a Friday. Yes, sirree. It's Friday again. Oh, yes, sirree. I made another weekend. It's going to work this time. We're going to swing all the way. It's going to go zing, zing, zingity, zing. Oh, ba 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 da 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 ba ba da 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 ba 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 da da ba 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 da 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 da. Thank God it's Friday. Ba 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 da 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 ba 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 da da da. Some of these days, you're going to be sorry, baby. Some of these days, you're
going to be happy.
Yeah,
happy.
One of these days, you're just going to walk down that street, you're going to weep, cry, yeah. Because you're going to miss all that kiss. You're going to miss all that loving. Yeah, let's hear that thing. Come on. Hit them bells. Ring them gongs. Tinkity-tinkity. Ba 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 da, ba 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 do, ba ba oh yeah, I'm gonna miss them kisses. Oh, one of these days, baby, you're gonna be so sorry. Ba 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 da, ba 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 da, ba 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 oh oh, ba 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 da da ba da, ba 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 da, ba 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 da, ba 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 da, ba 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 da da da.
Yeah. You liked it, didn't you, Al? You got to admit it, you liked it. Hey, that's not bad. Hey, wouldn't that make a groovy 45? I'll say, wouldn't it? It really would, you know. And please, while you're resetting that, I may want to do that again, you know, if you get carried away. It's like the flywheel effect. Will you please hit the Dr. Pepper button? They're marching.
Good morning. It is dawn. I am speaking to you from a deserted field somewhere in the western United States. As I look around, I can see the men and mechanics of Dr. Pepper waiting anxiously around their trucks. Eddie, Dr. Pepper's most veteran driver, stands near the fire as the kid, his first run before him, turns and says,
"Gee, Eddie, I hope there won't be any trouble."
"Don't worry, kid."
Dawn is beginning to lighten the eastern sky as everyone waits to hear the final words from the captain before they leave for New York.
"Men of the Dr. Pepper squadron, this is the captain. You have all received your orders. The road ahead will not be easy, but knowing you as I am, I am confident that despite the pitfalls and misunderstandings each of you shall face, you shall take Dr. Pepper to New York in victory. Nothing can stop us now."
There you have it. The trucks are speeding off with the words of the captain ringing in the ears of every driver. Dr. Pepper's coming to New York, May 18th. Nothing can stop us now.
Jump, jump, bump. They're marching, marching everywhere. Hey, listen, I'm sorry. I'm a real sucker for groovy cartoons. I mean, really funny ones. I mean, what I think are funny. You know? By the way, do you know that certain psychologists use cartoons to give a trace or certainly a profile of personality traits? Yeah, they'll give a person, 15 or 20 funny cartoons of various types, and they will make a great to-do about what he laughs at and what he doesn't laugh at. It takes a certain kind of guy to laugh at somebody, you know, that's got an axe stuck in the top of his head. You know, people, ha, 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 whoo, whoo, whoo. And that says a lot, you know, they write it down there. So you got to be careful, you know. Now maybe this says something about me, you amateur psychologist. I really don't. Cartoons come and go, and I make no, to me, it makes no difference where a cartoon appears, you know. Some people say, well, I dig New Yorker cartoons or I dig Playboy cartoons. But in most cases, you'll find that, there's good cartoons in the worst places. Sometimes you'll see a groovy cartoon written on the side of a frozen Coke machine down in the subway. But here I found a funny little cartoon. You don't mind if I tell you what it is? It shows this astronaut, see? And he's got a little space suit on, the whole bit, see? And he's on some unnamed planet. And you could see it's dark, there's stars above him, your typical scene like on the moon, but he's on some unnamed planet. And you see him, he's running like hell. He's running, he's looking real scared. And above him, you see an enormous fly swatter coming down. well, here's another one. You want to hear another one? That's here's another one. If you don't mind, I have one. It shows this guy. He's stepping out of his little space capsule. It's sitting there on its tripod, and he's on this unnamed planet. And you see this way off in the distance. You see a little round Earth way off there. See, it's on the horizon, and he's looking real confused because right next to him, where he's standing, is one of these telescopes, the kind you see at Lover's Leap in Waukesha, Wisconsin, where it says, "See the panoramic view." You can see four states from this point. And it says, "See Earth, 10 cents, 5 minutes." He's looking at it. I'm sorry, you know. And, of course, the same guy did the same cartoon that I suggested one time. Great, I remember suggesting this. Just an idea came to me. It shows this guy. Here he is. He's up on the moon, see? And he's got a flag on him, on his suit and the whole thing, and you can see his little spacesuit in the background. And he has just arrived at a planet, not necessarily the moon, but it's a planet. And you can see the Earth way off in the distance in the black sky. And he is up there, obviously, the first man on this planet to get the artifacts back and stuff. And he's looking down, and he's looking just blank at his feet. Is a Miller High Life beer can. I'm sorry. I don't know why that appeals to me. There's another one, see?
It shows this guy. He's in a capsule now. He's not even in outside of it yet. You know, he's in this triangular shaped capsule, and they're nearing a mysterious planet. It's a completely different planet. You know, obviously it's not the moon. It's just a planet someplace, and you see nothing but blackness all around him. He's in the vast Stygian reaches of trackless space, and he's approaching this planet. And he's looking out at, you know, a little window they got. He's looking out, and you see written on this planet in big letters, "Yankee, go home." Did you say it? I'm sorry. And you want to hear some more of those? You like those, huh? It shows another guy. By the way, speaking of trackless planets, this is WOR. George, half this place is still unexplored. This is WOR New York. We're in Fun City. Do you have another dinghy for us, Big Al? Hit it.
How soon is the baby in mother's womb a human being? What does he do while waiting to be born? Would you believe somersaulting? How soon a cure for cancer? How drugs work? Can you fall in love at 40, 80? Story of Life, Part 1. Now on sale at your local magazine counter, gives you the facts. Week after week, Story of Life examines and explores your whole body, glands, brain, emotions, the shape of your personality, erotic thoughts, and passion. Story of Life, Part 1. Week after week explores and reveals the fascinating facts of life today. Story of Life in magazine format is published each week and is packed with full-color photographs and illustrations. Over a period of time, your weekly magazines build into 7 volumes of medical fact and opinion. Story of Life is exciting reading and information for all the family. Be sure to get your first copy of Story of Life, Part 1, from your local magazine counter today. Only 75 cents per copy. Get Story of Life and find out what makes you tick.
Oh, wow. Oh, wowee. Now, that's an exciting magazine. Hey, Story of Life. By the way, I had a laugh at that great phrase in that commercial. I was just sitting there. That's the first time I heard it, too. It comes out, Story of Life, now on your newsstand, gives you the facts week after week. I like that. The facts about life. Oh, yeah, indeed. I wonder what all these novelists have been struggling to do for the last 40 million years, all the way back to Euripides. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, you know, speaking of magazines, you see some, you know, wild things. I think today's culture, really, is swinging away from classical-type literature. You know, I don't think many people today read hardcover books like they used to, you know, thousands of years ago. I mean, when hardcover books were made out of stone. And those were the original hardcover books. You know, the guy'd sit there and he'd chop it out with a mallet, you know. But nevertheless, I don't know why I feel so silly tonight. But nevertheless, hardcover books are not as big as they used to be, you know. Well, actually, the ones that are being read are actually bigger physically. I mean, have you ever tried to lift the Rona Jaffe novel? Oh, I know a guy got a hernia. He was in the hospital 6 months, you know, just picked up... what was it? The Best of Everything, twice, you know. He wasn't ready for it, but nevertheless, you got to get in condition, you know. You don't walk around with a Valley of the Dolls, you know. That thing weighed... Remember when Herman Woke was always writing those big books that weighed about, like, you know, bowling ball in one hand, Herman Woke in the other, to keep, keep from tilting? And, hey, by the way, speaking of great literature... I want to give you a tip. If you want to hear something really wild on the radio, this is just a tip. And I think it's a very interesting experiment. You notice that I'm rarely chauvinistic about WOR. You don't hear me sitting around just saying, don't miss the Jack O'Brien show tomorrow. He interviews Charlie Dildock, a famous crossword puzzle worker. Yes, hard-hitting Jack O'Brien. No, I let you take it or leave it. It's up to you. And my feeling is that this is a very... Hey, by the way, speaking of radio, why is it that everybody, whenever they run across a clipping somewhere about old radio, immediately send it to me, and they write on top of it, "This is right up your alley, Shep. I'm going to have to come on record as saying I have absolutely no interest in old radio, have never had any interest in old radio, didn't listen to old radio when it was on." That's right. I'm going to tell you a terrible story. I did not. I think the world divides into two groups of people, the audience and the others. I believe this strongly. You don't think for a minute that Jack Benny sat around and listened to the radio, did you? No. you know, there's a difference between being involved and listening. And in fact, I have no interest in old radio because I wasn't involved. I wasn't there. Old radio has no connection with me, never has had any connection. I haven't even had the faintest interest in it. You know, another thing about it, that's like roughly sending a letter to Cleon Jones, see? Or let's say, you know, just take a guy at random. All right, Tommy Agee or Cleon Jones, see? You send them a letter, and you found a clipping about Ty Cobb, see? Something about Ty Cobb. And it says, Ty Cobb in 1921 held the left-handed spitting record for members of the Detroit Tigers. He once spit a wad of tobacco juice 7 feet, 3.5 inches to the outfield side of second base from home plate, which still stands. It's an unbroken record for left-handed hitters freestyle spitting. Well, you know, and so then you write to Cleon Jones. You say, well, you're a ball player. This is right up your alley, Cleon. You must sit around the dugout and talk about Ty Cobb a lot. I never hear anybody in radio, and this is going to come as a real disappointment to you, I never hear anybody in radio ever, I don't recall ever, I'm talking about radio, ever anybody sitting around talking about Our Gal Sunday, or about Jack Benny, or about Fred Allen. Never, never. We're working. You know, this nuttiness goes even further than that. The other day, a publisher came to me. I don't know why he did, you know. Almost hit him in the beak. I got a letter, you know, and he came up. He says, here's a book. He says, hey, it's a book you want. And I says, what is it? He says, look, it's right up your alley. It's the history of radio. I says, am I in it? He says, what do you mean you're in it? It's a history of radio. Gee. I says, what do you mean, history? He, well, of course, he says, of course, you know, it's got about Fred Allen and Jack Benny. It's got about the Mr. Tracer of Lost Keens Persons. It's got about, Mike L. Sunday, or is it Monday? It's about all them good, Mary Marlin. It's all about them good stuff. And I says, well, look, what is this, you know, the history of radio. Radio is still on. And people keep writing the history of radio. They keep stopping about 1936, you know. And if you were to pick up the average of history radio, William B. Williams never existed. Martin Block never existed. Gene Shepherd never existed. Cousin Brucey never existed. And they call it the history radio. That's like if you wrote the history of baseball and you stopped with the 1936 St. Louis Cardinals. The day that Dizzy Dean hung up his glove, that was the end of baseball, you know. It's wild. They keep doing this. And, you know, most other things are the opposite. Most other histories are the opposite. For example, if you buy the history of the theater, they concentrate mostly on the contemporary theater. You have L.B., you have, Arthur Colpett, you have Geraldine Page. They rarely mention, say, something like John Wilkes Booth. and yet, this is a crazy business. And so, don't send me any clippings about old radio. I don't care about old radio. And by the way, stop sending me letters about, did you see Lorne Green last week on the Bonanza? He was I don't watch television. I mean, stop it. The audience keeps, I don't know, the audience keeps confusing the people that do the stuff with the audience. You know, they really do. And this kind of, oh, by the way, speaking of how I got off on it, speaking of the theater, I would like to recommend to you this night for something. If you're walking around, if you got your car radio on, take a listen. You may find it an interesting experience. I'll bet a lot of you have never heard first line big time drama on the radio. Now this is quite an experience. You know, most of us have seen drama in the theater. I imagine most of you who are listening tonight have seen Broadway shows and have seen drama on the boards. But you know, it's an entirely different experience if you listen to drama, because it has, in many ways, an added dimension. Because it's the dimension of your mind. And these people assume different characters in your mind than if you see the actual guy on the stage. And if you're curious about having an experience like that, I would like to suggest this Sunday, Tune in to WOR, and it's on AM, too, by the way, the station you're listening to. Tune in to WOR at 3:30 Sunday afternoon, which is a time, you know, a lot of people are just doing nothing. You know, there's what's on television, a rerun of an old golf tournament, something like that, you know. And the Ripped Horn is on shooting bighorn elk someplace, you know. And I would suggest that you give a listen at 3:30, because from 3:30 to 6, WOR is broadcasting the complete Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller. And, I mean, it's wild. In fact, Lee J. Cobb, Mildred Dunnock, and Dustin Hoffman is in this particular version. So it should be very interesting. And it's being presented in association with the Mutual Broadcasting System, with also in cooperation with Cavern Records. So this is big-time radio drama. And this is the kind of stuff where, to me, radio drama, believe me, is not... never was. Maybe that's why I never listened to radio, really. I thought, for the most part, The Lone Ranger was dull. Dull, you know. Dullsville. Once they finished the opening, then you got into this dull stuff. Me go to town. You, me help you. Lone Ranger, you know, who needs this? But nevertheless, that's going to be this Sunday. Hey, you know, speaking of oddments here, I was speculating here a couple of weeks ago, and somebody answered my question. A doctor wrote to me and said, Shepard, for your information, a full-grown human brain, how much do you think a full-grown human brain weighs? That's pretty close. How much would you guess, Al? You'd guess 5 pounds, Lee, you say four. Well, you're both quite close. 3.5 pounds. The full-grown human brain. Of course, that's the normal human brain. Now, that doesn't include listeners, doesn't include, you know. I mean. Now, look, I'm being funny. Now, watch me. Mr. Shepard, insulting your listeners is in very bad taste. Mr. Gambling, that wonderful young John, he never does that. Yeah, he has a lot of things he don't do, honey. Pain. Look, you know, you wouldn't believe it that Al, who's with me tonight, my trusty engineer, used to do the Metropolitan Opera. Right, Al? How the mighty have fallen. He's gone from Fausto Clava doing Mephistopheles. Yeah. Oh, listen, I love that. That. To me, that's my favorite opera. I like that moment, see, when Niccolo Mascogna comes leaping out of the stage, 7 feet tall. See, give me a little echo chamber. I'll do it. See, here's his Faust. 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 Well, not yet, Al. No. You got to see. Cues are important in the opera, and so here's Faust himself. See, played by Eugene Conley, and he's, you know, little Faust. He's looking. He's just signed his pact, or he's just about to sign his pact, and so he sings that aria where he calls upon the devil. He calls upon the devil to come along. He's ready to sign, you know. And he's an old man at this point. You've seen that scene, haven't you? And he goes, wait a minute. That's a little too much echo. He goes, all right, far back. All right, he goes, watch out and that's the moment, see, he is despaired of his soul. You remember that moment? He is despaired of his soul, and he is crying to the heavens that he is willing to sell his soul to the devil. A little reprise there, the way Morton, where, what's his name, Martin, the elegant announcer. Milton Cross would say, and now we hear Faust, Dr. Faust, as he beseeches the heavens asking for the devil to come and buy his soul. He is willing to sell his soul now for eternal youth. We now reprise that moment. Zap! And at that moment, out of the stage and down from the orchestra pit comes the thunder of a fantastic 117-piece orchestra conducted by Fausto Clayton. It's Mephistopheles arriving on the scene. And he comes sweeping up with a gigantic red cape, you know, with the black lining and all. Oh, you've seen that, haven't you? Don't you remember that? One of my favorite moments. As a matter of fact, many times I sit in my office, see, and I look up at the only connection I have with the outside world. My little air conditioning unit they put in. They got one of these little used air conditioning units in my office. Came from the Salvation Army. They got it from some bar in Third Avenue, you know. You can still smell the beer coming out of it. And they got it hooked up, see, and it goes constantly. See, little thing there, you know, and it's putting away. And as it puts away, it drops rusty water on my head. And once in a while, out comes a memo. Well, I'm sitting there living with my air conditioning unit, see? Yeah, he's my friend. And I'm sitting there, and once in a while, I look up there, you see, because the air conditioning unit controls my whole atmosphere. After all, no wonder people honor their air conditioning units, because they, in a sense, are godlike in our time. What does God do? Well, God can control your whole world. He can make storms come. He can make thunder roll. He can make it cold. He can make it hot. He can make it air. Well, that's your air conditioning unit, see? So I sit in front of my air conditioning unit, and once in a while, when things are really tough, you know, and then there's a whole drift of memos from the 23rd floor up in front of my office, and I've waded through them, see, in my snowshoes, and I've come into the office. And all this stuff, and I can see cockroaches running out of my desk drawers. Oh, yeah, it's terrible down there in the 15th floor. It's awful. That's the slum floor of this building. And I'm sitting down there, see, and I can hear Arlene Francis in the next office crying because of some big scene that's happened. And I can hear Bill Mazur on the phone. Yes, of course. Well, here are my predictions for the next 500 years in the National Hockey League. I hear him, and I hear Jack O'Brien down the office way down there. He's always saying things like, get Cardinal Spellman on the phone. And it's going on up and down the line. See, well, it gets a little bit much after a while. And the phones are ringing. People are yelling and hollering. My air conditioning is... The hot water is coming on the top of my head. It is then that I look up at the air conditioning unit. And I burst into song. See, this is a crying out to the devil to come and take me. I'm ready to sign. Never shows up. I've never yet been approached by the devil. I'm willing to sign, you know. I'm willing to sell my soul for a mess of pottage. Well, not exactly pottage, you know. The last bowl of pottage I had, you know, they'll make it like they used to. But I'm ready to sell my soul for a little dross, possibly, but not pottage. By the way, it's a good word to add to your vocabulary, dross. And just fling the measly paycheck that the government and your boss allows you to have, see? You got to learn how to have style. So you fling it across the desk, and you go, ha, 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 ha. Little echo chamber there. Everybody's got to have an echo chamber in his life, see? You go, ha, 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 dross! Dross! You're not going to buy me for this. Think of how your kid will love you. Think how your kid will love you when he hears that you didn't sell out and you hit Mr. Bullet in the beak. Think how your kid will love you when you're going to have to tell him he's going to have to leave Rutgers because you can't pay the bills anymore. Think how he'll love you when you're going to have to tell him that no longer can you afford all those plane tickets so he can get to the next big demonstration, you know, like in Utah. Think how he'll love you Yes, indeed. You're no longer sold out. You're sitting out in the backyard just looking at the sky. Bum, ba-dum, bum. Yeah, indeed. Let's see. I'll take a look at this one. Hey, listen. Speaking of looks at the contemporary life, have you been watching the fantastic stamps that we have been having in our country lately? You remember, when groovy-looking stamps used to be the kind of stuff that you'd get in a collection of stamps, like 24 stamps on approval, including the rare golden octopus set from Tanzania, you know, that kind of stuff? Boy, take a look at some of these stamps. They are fantastic. Look at this. Did you see the newest one? Now, it has nothing to do with America. Look at this stamp here now. I want to hold it up to you. Have you seen this one? It's a yellow stamp, a great big one. By the way, all it says on it, it's a yellow stamp, and it has, in natural colors, it has a herd of elephants. And the stamp simply says, African elephant herd. That's all. Now, I don't know what African elephant herds have to do with American postage, but there it is. Maybe they're saying something about how long it takes for a letter to get somewhere, you know. But it says African elephant herd. It's a beautiful 6-cent stamp. Now, I hate to see this happen, actually. On the one, you know, I have a dual thing about this. On the one hand, I dig the idea we got beautiful stamps. Look at that. Look at this one. It's fantastic. Look at that. Look at this one. It's got green palm trees all over the place. And it's got a little pink thing in the background. It says Great American Paintings. How about that one? Now, you know, I had a theory about 5 years ago, which I'm going to trot out again. Do you mind if I trot it out? Any stamp collector will tell you that the tinier, the more desperate, the more sad a little country gets, the more beautiful become their stamps. This is a fact. Little tiny islands in the Pacific, for example, Pongo Pongo, will have a stamp that weighs 4 pounds, has gold leaf on it, has green fur all over the outside of it, you know, and it says 17 copetas on it. And underneath it, there's a picture of the ruler, and it says, Our Benefactor. And people all over the world, but it's the only way they can impress the rest of the world, so you have to have fantastic stamps. And so you'll find that Switzerland has great stamps. Oh, wow, you know, see the Swiss stamps. Mauritius. Now, how many of you have ever been to Mauritius? You never hear about Mauritius. Okay, now, how about, you know, whoever goes to Mauritius, you never hear about, you know, Mauritius threatens India. Mauritius makes major statement in UN, threatens to withdraw aid from Saudi Arabia. Oh, no. Oh, let me tell you. Some of the most beautiful stamps in the world are Mauritius stamps. Okay? Shepherd has a theory then. The theory is this. I will put it out. It's the reverse ratio. The importance of a country is an inverse ratio to the beauty of its stamps. And so you get a fantastic country at the peak of its powers, like, say, America, in the 40s. The peak of its power, we had a little tiny green stamp with a little faded picture of Washington on it. That's all. You remember a little tiny, little blue stamp? You can hardly see it. It's a little stamp. It's so big. I mean, you blow it off the fingertip and it'll fly. You don't even, like dust. A little big stamp. It says 3 cents, a little tiny three on it. Nothing else, you see. That was because we didn't have to prove anything to anybody. The stamp is the facade you give to the world. That's the part of America that, you know, arrives in different countries. Very important. It's like, have you ever noticed when some guy is the manager or he's the, let's say, the vice president of a cockamamie, flim-flam, and ding-dong agency? Some little agency down on Lower Third Avenue, you see, and they got one account, his brother-in-law, Henry, see, who runs a hardware store in Utopia Parkway. See, it's a little ding-dong agency down there. He has got a card that is not only engraved, it plays Happy Birthday when you look at it, see? And it has little built-in fireworks. You see, when you take it out of your wallet, it shoots little skyrockets up. And there it is. It says, Henry W. Flimflam, President in Charge of Creative Management, the Ding Dong Flink Flam and Cockamamie Agency. this is the littler the guy, the bigger the card. Oh, it's always that way, you know? The littler the man, the more jazzy he generally dresses. And so you'll find little guys, you know, with these fantastic Edwardian suits, and they're all, you know, they're all big sideburns go down at her knees and the whole bit. The little guy, he comes, you know, a little squirt, and this is the only way he can do it. He's got to present a facade, see? Yeah, oh, no, you don't. Boog Powell doesn't have to prove nobody to nothing. I mean, when Boog Powell walks into a bar, he does not have to, you know, say, hey, look at this. I got it just fresh from Barney's. Oh, how do you like this? The Neo-Edwardian ding-dong meaty look. You know, he doesn't need it. Boog Powell comes in his wind jacket, you know, his windbreaker. Hey, you know, he just sort of stands there, 290 pounds of solid gristle. He doesn't prove anything. And so the littler the guy, the sweatier the novels he writes, the littler the guy, the jazzier the cards he has printed up, the littler the guy, you know, all the way down. Hi, there's one of our little guys in there. Look at him. The littler the guy, the more fantastic, the, you know, the mustache, beard, the whole bit. Well, I'll tell you, when it finally winds up to countries, you'll find that the littler, squeakier the country, some little country, you know, that's barely making it. In fact, the country consists of four guys in a rowboat that's anchored somewhere off the coast of Greece. You know, and here they are. They call themselves Japip. You know, they got a king, they got a prime minister, they got a prince, they got a guy in charge of armaments, they got a guy in charge of, you know, civil defense. You know who always does this stuff great? One of my favorite characters in all of theater, Peter Ustinov. Peter Ustinov, some of the Mouse That Roared, and that other fantastic movie that I enjoyed. What was the name of that other one? Not The Mouse That Roared, the other one was so funny. When he's in charge of the country and they got this, he is the prince. Wait a minute, I'll get it. Yes? Oh, Romanoff and Juliet. Yeah, what a funny, funny movie that is. You ever see that, Matt? Oh, you got to watch it sometime. When it shows up on TV, when their army is having its, having its maneuvers in the square, you see, in this little country. What's the name of the country again? It's some country like Blatsunov or some crazy name like Lower Blatsunovia. And they all show up in their colorful native garbs. They have these knit stocking caps, you know, with two little balls on the top. And this is a colorful. We are always wearing the colorful native garb. And they walk around. Well, now, this is very typical of a country. When you travel around countries a lot, you know, you go from one country to the next, big ones and little ones, and you've done any world traveling. When you begin, and especially if you're, you know, if you're connected at all with the tourist department of that country, you arrive at this crummy little country, you know, kind of sad little country, and the head of the tourist department, if you're talking to him, he said, well, we wish to welcome you to Lower Slavovia. I'm sure you will have an interesting time here at Lower Slavovia, and to help you in your stay here at Lower Slavovia, we have prepared a brochure which illustrates the various wonderful qualities of Lower Slavovian life. Here, it gives you this book. See, it weighs 7 pounds, and it's done in 16 different colors. And, you know, it's a photograph of, on the cover, you see the native folk dance, which is one of the dullest dances ever seen by man. It consists of a lot of people standing around and jiggling up and down, wearing wool skirts with tassels hanging on them, see? And they played a plonkinoff, which is their native instrument, which consists of one string and sounds like somebody blowing his nose into Kleenex. And so he says, you will like this. You must, of course, see the Victory Arch. The Victory Arch, which celebrates the victory of Lois Labonikik over Kuznetsov. Well, Kuznetsov, of course, you realize in the 15th century was under Leopold the Leopard. And he was a terrible tyrant, and we have defeated him in the battle. And that we have the Victory Arch. And you look at the Victory Arch, and it's this little sad thing made out of stucco. See, the rain has blown it over. And this is the way little countries are. So I'm a little worried now about our great stamps. I'm a little worried. That stamp is looking a little bit more like Mauritius every time I get a stamp. Where do we start having the famous American Triangle series? That's the first sign of going down. Any of you stamp collectors know what I mean. Have you ever collected stamps, Matt? Have you heard of the triangle series? Well, stamps come, you know, in triangular shapes. Some of the little tiny countries have given up trying to make them really groovy, you know, with gold and with pearls hanging on them and stuff. So they figure that by making an exotic shape, so you can get the triangular shapes now in Mauritius. That's very big. Now, if America was to make the shape of its stamps to fit its most current preoccupations, it would hardly have African elephants on them. Imagine a stamp cut into the shape of a current preoccupation of America. Well, you've seen the movies. What are all movies about? Well, I'm just asking, what are all movies about? Do you ever watch TV late at night, Matt? Well, how about
And now, with blessed new freedom, with healthy freedom, we present Porno Number 7. Porno Number 7, photographed in beautiful color, rated R. Yes, by the producers who gave you Guts, that latest new fantastic porno. And it tells you all about how things really are in Denmark. You know how things are in Denmark. An educational film, rated R. Nobody over 21 will be allowed to even get near it.
Well, now, have you noticed they're all calling themselves educational? How many of you got much of an education from I Am Curious Yellow? You know, I never thought of it that way. By George. Please, Matt, if you will, let us sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye. 4 and 20 blackbirds were baked into a pie. Fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of an Englishman. Who are we quoting there? Gee. Let's see. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humphrey together again. Yeah, it was that egg, wasn't it? Humphrey Dumpty. That's it. Humphrey Dumpty. Little... Gee, you know those old nursery rhymes. They just never leave you. Little Jack Horner stood in the corner. Yeah, remember him? Yeah. No, that's wrong. No, it wasn't. It was Little Jack Warner stood in the corner. That's right. Little Jack Warner stood in the corner, eating his curds and whey. Thought I'd never leave you. I'll tell you, those things stick with you. Yeah. What was his name? Dumplestiltskin. The guy. Oh, well, you know, these things. It doesn't really matter, you know, one way or the other. But it's all part of our culture. It's all part of the zeitgeist of the Western world. Jeez, that reminds me. It's too late to tell you that, you know. I could tell you this great story about Zeitgeist. Remember him. But we'll be out tomorrow night at 10:05. And don't forget, we'll take you on a quiet, quick tour through the colorful peasant streets of Zeitgeist itself. Tomorrow, with illustrated slides and with a 16-millimeter sound-on-film widescreen exposition. That's 10:05. That is part of your assignment. You are not going to miss it.